The following is the text entry for Harvey Milk, and is current as of November 29, 2008. For the text of this article, please visit www.wikipedia.org. Harvey Milk. For other uses, see Harvey Milk disambiguation. Harvey Bernard Milk, May 22, 1930 to November 27, 1978, was an American politician and the first openly gay man to be elected to public office in California as a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Milk was born and raised in New York, where he acknowledged his homosexuality as an adolescent, but chose to pursue sexual relationships with secrecy and discretion well into his adult years. His experience in the counterculture of the 1960s caused him to shed many of his conservative views about individual freedom and the expression of sexuality. Milk moved to San Francisco in 1972 and opened a camera store, Castro Camera. Although he had been restless, holding an assortment of jobs and moving frequently, he settled in the Castro District, a neighborhood that was experiencing a mass influx of gay men and lesbians. He felt compelled to run for city supervisor in 1973, though he encountered resistance from the existing gay political establishment. His campaign was compared to a theater. He was brash, outspoken, animated, and outrageous, earning media attention and votes, although not enough to be elected. He campaigned again in the next two supervisor elections, dubbing himself the, quote, Mayor of Castro Street, end quote. Voters responded enough to warrant his running for the California State Assembly as well. Taking advantage of his growing popularity, he led the gay political movement in fierce battles against anti-gay initiatives. Milk was elected city supervisor in 1977 after San Francisco reorganized its election procedures to choose representatives from neighborhoods rather than through citywide ballots. Milk served almost 11 months as city supervisor and was responsible for passing a stringent gay rights ordinance of San Francisco. On November 27, 1978, Milk and Mayor George Moscone were assassinated by Dan White, another city supervisor who had recently resigned and wanted his job back. Both Milk's election and the events following his assassination demonstrated the liberalization of the population and political conflicts between the city government and conservative police force. Milk has become an icon in San Francisco and a martyr for gay rights, according to the University of San Francisco professor Peter Novak. While established political organizers in the city insisted gays work with liberal politicians and use restraint in reaching their objectives, Milk outspokenly encouraged gays to use their growing power in the city and support each other. His goal was to give hope to the disenfranchised gays around the country. In 2002, he was called the most famous and most significantly open LGBT official ever elected in the United States. Writer John Cloud remarked on his influence, quote, after he defied the governing class of San Francisco in 1977 to become a member of its Board of Supervisors, many people, straight and gay, had to adjust to a new reality he embodied, that a gay person could live an honest life and succeed. Contents. Early life. Early career. Move to San Francisco. Rise of Castro Street. Changing politics. Campaigns. Mayor of Castro Street. Serious candidate. Outing Sipple. Race for State Assembly. Broader historical forces. Just politics. Last campaign. Supervisor. Briggs Initiative. Black Monday. City in Agony. Trial. White Night Riots. Aftermath. Legacy. Politics. Tributes and Namesakes. Media Portrayals. Early life. Harvey Bernard Milk was born in Woodmere, New York, on Long Island on May 22, 1930, to William and Minerva Carnes Milk. He was the younger son of Eastern European Jewish parents and the grandson of a Lithuanian salesman, Morris Milk, who eventually owned a department store and helped to organize the first synagogue in the area. As a child, Milk was teased for his protruding ears, big nose, and oversized feet, and tended to grab attention as a class clown. He played football in school and developed a passion for opera. In his teens, he acknowledged his homosexuality, but kept it a guarded secret. Under his name in the high school yearbook, it read, Glimpy Milk, and they say women are never at a loss for words. Milk graduated from Bay Shore High School in Bay Shore, New York, in 1947, and attended New York State College for Teachers in Albany, now the University of Albany, from 1947 to 1951, majoring in mathematics. He wrote for the college newspaper and earned a reputation as a gregarious, friendly student. None of his friends in high school or college seemed to have suspected that he was gay. One classmate remembered, quote, he was never thought of as a possible queer. That's what you called them then. He was a man's man, end quote. After graduation, Milk joined the U.S. Navy during the Korean War. He served aboard the submarine rescue ship USS Kittiwake as a diving officer. He later transferred to Naval Station San Diego to serve as a diving instructor. In 1955, he was discharged from the Navy at the rank of lieutenant, junior grade. Early career. Milk's early career was marked by frequent changes. In later years, he would take delight in talking about his metamorphosis from a middle-class Jewish boy. He began teaching at George W. Hewlett High School on Long Island. In 1956, he met Joe Campbell at the Jacob Riis Park Beach, a popular location for gay men in Queens. Campbell was 7 years younger than Milk, and Milk pursued him passionately. Even after they moved in together, Milk wrote Campbell romantic notes and poems. Quickly growing bored, they decided to move to Texas, but they were unhappy there and moved back to New York, where Milk got a job as an actuarial statistician at an insurance firm. Campbell and Milk separated after almost 6 years. It would be his longest relationship. Milk tried to separate his early romantic life from his family and work. Once again bored and single in New York, he thought of moving to Miami to marry a lesbian friend to, quote, have a front and each would not be in the way of each other, end quote. However, he remained in New York and secretly pursued gay relationships. In 1962, Milk became involved with Craig Rodwell, who was 10 years younger. Though Milk courted Rodwell ardently, waking him every morning with a call and sending him notes, Milk was discouraged by Rodwell's involvement with the New York Mattachine Society, a gay activist organization. When Rodwell was arrested for walking in Riis Park, charged with inciting a riot and indecent exposure, the law required men's swimsuits to extend from above the navel to below the thigh, he spent 3 days in jail. The relationship soon ended as Milk became alarmed at Rodwell's tendency to agitate the police. Milk abruptly stopped working as an insurance salesman and became a researcher at the Wall Street firm Botch & Company. He was frequently promoted despite his tendency to offend the older members of the firm by ignoring their advice and flaunting his success. Although he was skilled at his job, coworkers sensed that Milk's heart was not in his work. He started a relationship with Jack Gallen McKinley and recruited him in the fight against the proliferation of big government by persuading McKinley to work on conservative Republican Barry Goldwater's 1964 presidential campaign. Their relationship was troubled. McKinley was prone to depression and frequently threatened to commit suicide if Milk did not show him enough attention. To make the point to McKinley, Milk took him to the hospital, where Milk's ex-lover Joe Campbell was recuperating from a suicide attempt after his lover, a man named Billy Sipple, left him. Milk had remained friendly with Campbell, who had entered the avant-garde art scene in Greenwich Village, and did not understand why Campbell's despondency was sufficient cause to consider suicide as an option. Move to San Francisco. Rise of Castro Street. The Eureka Valley of San Francisco, where Market and Castro Streets intersect, had for decades been a blue-collar Irish Catholic neighborhood synonymous with the Most Holy Redeemer Parish. Beginning in the 1960s, however, young families left the neighborhood and moved to Bay Area suburbs, and the city's economic base eroded as factories moved to cheaper locations nearby. Joseph Eliotto, proud of his working-class background and supporters, based his political career on welcoming developers and attracting a cardinal to the city. Many blue-collar workers, often Eliotto supporters, lost their jobs as large corporations with service industry positions replaced factory and dry dock jobs. San Francisco had been a city of villages, a decentralized city with ethnic enclaves that each surrounded its own main street. As the downtown area developed, neighborhoods suffered, including Castro Street. The Most Holy Redeemer Parish shops shut down, and houses were abandoned and shuttered. In 1963, real estate prices plummeted when most of the working-class families tried to sell their houses quickly after a gay bar opened in the neighborhood. Hippies, attracted to the free-love ideals of the Haight-Ashbury area but repulsed by the crime rate, bought some of the cheap Victorian houses. Since the end of World War II, the major port city of San Francisco had been home to a sizable number of gay men expelled from the military who had decided to stay rather than return to their hometowns and faced ostracism. By 1969, San Francisco had more gay people per capita than any other American city, when the National Institute of Mental Health asked the Kinsey Institute to survey homosexuals. The Kinsey Institute chose San Francisco as its focus. Milk and McKinley were among the thousands of gay men attracted to San Francisco. McKinley was a stage manager for Tom O'Horgan, a director who started his career in experimental theater, but soon graduated to much larger Broadway productions. They arrived in 1969 with the Broadway touring company of Hair. McKinley was offered a job in the New York City production of Jesus Christ Superstar, and their tempestuous relationship came to an end. The city appealed to Milk so much that he decided to stay, working at an investment firm. In 1970, increasingly frustrated with the political climate after the U.S. invasion of Cambodia, Milk started to grow his hair. When told to cut it, he refused and was fired. Milk drifted from California to Texas to New York without a steady job or plan. In New York, he became involved with O'Horgan's theater company as a general aide, signing on as an associate producer for Lenny. The time he had spent with the cast of Flower Children had worn away much of Milk's conservatism. A New York Times story about O'Horgan described Milk as a sad-eyed man, another aging hippie with long, long hair wearing faded jeans and pretty beads. Craig Rodwell read the description of the formerly uptight man and wondered if it could have been the same person. One of Milk's Wall Street friends worried that he seemed to have no plan or future, but remembered Milk's attitude. Quote, "I think he was happier than at any time I had ever seen him in his entire life," end quote. Milk met Scott Smith, 20 years his junior, and began another relationship. He and Smith, now indistinguishable from the other long-haired, bearded hippies, returned to San Francisco and lived on money they had saved. In 1972, a roll of film Milk dropped off to be developed was ruined. With their last $1,000, Milk opened a camera store on Castro Street. Changing politics. In the late 1960s, the Society for Individual Rights, SIR, and the Daughters of Bilitis, DOB, began to work against police persecution of gay bars and the entrapment in San Francisco. Oral sex was still a felony, and in 1970, nearly 90 people in the city were arrested for it. Facing eviction if caught having homosexual sex in a rented apartment, and unwilling to face arrest in gay bars, some men turned to having sex in public parks at night. Mayor Eliotto asked the police to target the parks, hoping the decision would appeal to the archdiocese and his Catholic supporters. In 1971, 2,800 gay men were arrested for public sex in San Francisco. By comparison, New York City recorded only 63 arrests for the same offense that year. Any arrest for a moral charge required registration as a sex offender. Representative Philip Burton, Assemblyman Willie Brown, and other California politicians recognized the growing clout and organization of homosexuals in the city and courted their votes by attending meetings of gay and lesbian organizations. Brown pushed for the legalization of sex between consenting adults in 1969, but failed. SIR was also pursued by popular moderate supervisor Dianne Feinstein in her bid to become mayor, opposing Eliotto. Ex-policeman Richard Hengisto worked for 10 years to change the conservative views of the San Francisco Police Department and also actively appealed to the gay community, which responded by raising significant funds for his campaign for sheriff. Though Feinstein was unsuccessful, Hengisto's win in 1971 showed the political clout of the gay community. SIR had become powerful enough for political maneuvering. In 1971, SIR members John Foster, Rick Stokes, and advocate publisher David Goodstein formed the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club, known simply as ALICE. Alice befriended liberal politicians to persuade them to sponsor bills, proving successful in 1972 when Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon obtained Feinstein's support in an ordinance outlawing employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Alice chose Stokes to run for a relatively unimportant seat on the Community College Board. Though Stokes received 45,000 votes, He was quiet, unassuming, and did not win. Foster, however, shot to national prominence by being the first openly gay man to address a political convention. His speech at the 1972 Democratic National Convention ensured that his voice, according to the San Francisco politicians, was the one to be heard when they wanted the opinions, and especially votes, of the gay community. One day in 1973, a state bureaucrat entered Milk's shop, Castro Camera, informing him that he owed $100 as a deposit against state sales tax. Milk was incredulous and traded shouts with the man about the rights of business owners. After he complained for weeks at state offices, the deposit was reduced to $30. Milk fumed about government priorities when a teacher came into his store to borrow a projector because the equipment in the schools did not function. Friends also remember, around the same time, having to restrain him for kicking a television while Attorney General John N. Mitchell gave consistent "I don't recall" replies during the Watergate hearings. Milk decided that the time had come to run for city supervisor. He said later, "I finally reached the point where I knew I had to become involved or shut up." Campaigns. Milk's reception by the gay political establishment in San Francisco was icy. Jim Foster, who had by then been active in gay politics for 10 years, resented the newcomers asking for his endorsement for a position as prestigious as city supervisor. Foster told Milk, quote, "There's an old saying in the Democratic Party. You don't get to dance unless you put up the chairs. I've never seen you put up the chairs," end quote. Milk was furious at the patronizing snub, and the conversation marked the beginning of an antagonistic relationship between Alice and Harvey Milk. Some gay bar owners, still battling police harassment and unhappy with what they saw as a timid approach by Alice to establish authority in the city, decided to endorse him. Though he had drifted throughout his life thus far, Milk had found his vocation, according to journalist Francis Fitzgerald, who called him a born politician. At first, his inexperience showed. He tried to do without money, support, and staff, and instead relied on his message of conservative financial management, promoting individuals over large corporations and government. He supported the reorganization of supervisor elections from a citywide ballot to district ballots, which reduced the influence of money and gave neighborhoods more control over their representatives in city government. He also ran on a socially liberal platform, opposing government interference in private sexual matters and favoring the legalization of marijuana. Milk's fiery, flamboyant speeches and savvy media skills earned him a significant amount of press during the 1973 election. He earned 16,900 votes, sweeping the Castro district and other liberal neighborhoods, coming out 10th place out of 32 candidates. Had the election been reorganized to allow districts to elect their own supervisors, he would have won. Mayor of Castro Street. Milk displayed an affinity for building coalitions early in his political career. The Teamsters Union wanted to strike against beer distributors who refused to sign the union contract. An organizer asked Milk for assistance with gay bars. In return, Milk asked for the union to hire more gay drivers. A few days later, Milk canvassed the gay bars in and surrounding the Castro district, urging them to refuse to sell the beer. With the help of a coalition of Arab and Chinese grocers the Teamsters had also recruited, the boycott was immensely successful. Milk found a strong political ally in organized labor, and it was around this time he began to style himself the mayor of Castro Street. As Castro Street grew, so did Milk's reputation. Tim O'Horgan remarked, quote, "Harvey spent most of his life looking for a stage. On Castro Street, he finally found it," end quote. Tensions between the older citizens of the Most Holy Redeemer Parish and the immigration of gays entering the Castro district were heightened in 1973. When two gay men tried to open an antique shop, the Eureka Valley Merchants Association, EVMA, attempted to prevent them from receiving a business license. Milk and a few other gay business owners founded the Castro Village Association, with Milk as the president. He often repeated his philosophy that gays should buy from gay businesses. Milk organized the Castro Street Fair in 1974 to attract more customers to the area. More than 5,000 attended, and some of the EVMA members were stunned. They did more business at Castro Street Fair than on any previous day. Serious candidate. Although he was a newcomer to the Castro district, Milk had shown leadership in the small community. He was starting to be taken seriously as a candidate and decided to run again for supervisor in 1975. He reconsidered his approach and cut his hair, swore off marijuana, and vowed never to visit another gay bathhouse again. Milk's campaigning earned him the support of Teamsters, firefighters, and construction unions. Castro Camera became a center of activity in the neighborhood. Milk would often pull people off the street to work his campaigns for him. Many discovered later that they had just happened to be the type of men Milk found attractive. Milk favored support for small businesses and the growth of neighborhoods. Since 1968, Mayor Eliotto had been luring large corporations to the city, despite what critics labeled as the Manhattanization of San Francisco. As blue-collar jobs were replaced by the service industry, Eliotto's weakened political base allowed for new leadership to be voted into office in the city. George Moscone was elected mayor. Moscone had been an instrumental in repealing the sodomy law earlier that year in the California state legislature. He acknowledged Milk's influence in his election by visiting Milk's election night headquarters, thanking Milk personally, and offering him a position as city commissioner. Milk came in seventh place in the election, only one position away from earning a supervisor seat. Liberal politicians held the offices of mayor, district attorney, and sheriff. Despite the new leadership in the city, there were still conservative strongholds. One of Moscone's first attempts as mayor was appointing a police chief to the embattled San Francisco Police Department, SFPD. He chose Charles Gayne against the wishes of the SFPD. Most of the force disliked Gayne for criticizing the police and the press for racial insensitivity and alcohol abuse on the job, instead of working within the command structure to change attitudes. By request of the mayor, Gayne made it clear that gay police officers would be welcomed in the department. This became national news. Police under Gayne expressed their hatred of him and of the mayor for betraying them. Outing Sipple. Milk's role as a representative of San Francisco's gay community expanded during this period. On September 22, 1975, President Gerald Ford was visiting San Francisco, walking from his hotel to his car. In the crowd, Sarah Jane Moore raised a gun to shoot him. An ex-Marine who had been walking by grabbed her arm as the gun discharged towards the pavement. The bystander was Oliver Bill Sipple, who had left Milk's ex-lover Joe Campbell years before, prompting Campbell's suicide attempt. Sipple, on psychiatric disability leave from the military, lived in the sleazy Tenderloin neighborhood, and the national spotlight was on him immediately. Though Sipple refused to call himself a hero and did not want his sexuality disclosed, Milk told a friend, quote, "It's too good an opportunity. For once we can show that gays do heroic things, not just all that caca about molesting children and hanging out in bathrooms," end quote. Milk contacted a newspaper. Several days later, Herb Cain, a columnist of the San Francisco Chronicle, exposed Sipple as gay and a friend of Milk's. Sipple was besieged by reporters, as was his family. His mother, a staunch Baptist in Detroit, refused to speak to him. Although he had been involved with the gay community for years, even participating in gay pride events, Sipple sued the Chronicle for invasion of privacy. President Ford sent Sipple a note of thanks for saving his life. Milk said that Sipple's sexual orientation was the reason he received only a note rather than an invitation to the White House. Race for State Assembly. Keeping his promise to Milk, newly elected Mayor George Moscone appointed him to the Board of Permit Appeals in 1976, making him the first openly gay city commissioner in the United States. Milk, however, considered seeking a position in the California State Assembly. The district was weighted heavily in his favor, as much of it was based in neighborhoods surrounding Castro Street, where Milk's sympathizers voted. In the previous race for supervisor, Milk received more votes than the currently seated assemblyman. However, Moscone had made a deal with the assembly speaker that another candidate should run, Art Agnos. Furthermore, by order of the mayor, neither appointed nor elected officials were allowed to run a campaign while performing their duties. Milk spent 5 weeks on the Board of Permit Appeals before Moscone was forced to fire him when he announced that he would run for California State Assembly. Rick Stokes replaced him. Milk's firing and the backroom deal made between Moscone, the assembly speaker, and Agnos fueled his campaign as he took on an identity of a political underdog. He railed that high officers in the city and state governments were against him. He complained that the prevailing gay political establishment, particularly the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club, were shutting him out. He referred to Jim Foster and Stokes as gay Uncle Toms. He enthusiastically embraced the local independent weekly magazine's headline, "Harvey Milk versus the machine. His campaign, run from the storefront of Castro Camera, was a study in disorganization. Although volunteers were plentiful and happy to send out mass mailings, Milk's notes and volunteer lists were kept on scrap papers. Anytime his campaign required funds, the money came from the cash register without any consideration for accounting. An 11-year-old neighborhood girl joyfully ordered gay men and Irish grandmothers to work on the campaign, despite her mother's discouragement. Milk himself was hyperactive and prone to fantastic outbursts of temper, only to recover quickly and shout excitedly about something else. Many of his rants were directed at his lover, Scott Smith, who was becoming disillusioned with the man who was no longer the laid-back hippie he had fallen in love with. If the candidate was manic, he was also dedicated and filled with good humor, and he had a particular genius for getting media attention. He spent long hours registering voters and shaking hands at bus stops and movie theater lines. He took whatever opportunity came along to promote himself. He was thoroughly enjoying campaigning, and his success was evident. With the large number of volunteers, he had dozens at a time stand along the busy thoroughfare of Market Street as human billboards, holding Milk for Assembly signs while commuters drove into the heart of the city to work. He distributed his campaign literature anywhere he could, including among the most influential political groups in the city, the People's Temple. Milk's volunteers took thousands of brochures there, but came back with feelings of apprehension. Because the People's Temple leader, Jim Jones, was politically powerful in San Francisco and supported both candidates, Milk allowed Temple members to work his phones and later spoke at the Temple and defended Jones. But to his volunteers, he said, "Make sure you're always nice people to the People's Temple. If they ask you to do something, do it, and send them a note thanking them for asking you to do it. They're weird and they're dangerous, and you never want to be on their bad side." The race was close, and Milk lost by fewer than 4,000 votes. Agnos, however, taught Milk a valuable lesson when he criticized Milk's campaign speeches as, quote, "a downer. You talk about how you're going to throw the bums out, but how are you going to fix things, other than beat me? You shouldn't leave your audience on a down," end quote. Broader historical forces. Further information, save our children. The fledgling gay rights movement had yet to meet organized opposition in the U.S. In 1977, a few well-connected gay activists in Miami, Florida, were able to pass a civil rights ordinance that made discrimination based on sexual orientation illegal in Dade County. A well-organized group of conservative fundamentalist Christians responded, headed by singer Anita Bryant. Their campaign was titled Save Our Children, and Bryant claimed the ordinance infringed her right to teach her children biblical morality. Bryant and the campaign gathered 64,000 signatures to put the issue to a countywide vote. With funds raised in part by the Florida Citrus Commission, for which Bryant was the spokeswoman, they ran television advertisements which contrasted the Orange Bowl parade with San Francisco's Gay Freedom Day parade, stating that Dade County would be turned into a, quote, "hotbed of homosexuality," end quote, where, quote, "men cavort with little boys," end quote. Jim Foster, then the most powerful political organizer in San Francisco, went to Miami to assist gay activists there as Election Day neared, and a nationwide boycott of orange juice was organized. The message of the Save Our Children campaign was influential, and the result was an overwhelming defeat for gay activists. In the largest turnout in any special election in the history of Dade County, 70% voted to repeal the law. Just politics. Christian conservatives were inspired by their victory and saw an opportunity for a new, effective political cause. Gay activists were shocked to see how little support they received. An impromptu demonstration of over 3,000 Castro residents formed the night of the Dade County ordinance vote. Gay men and lesbians were simultaneously angry, chanting, "out of our bars and into the streets," and elated at their passionate and powerful response. The San Francisco Examiner reported that members of the crowd pulled others out of bars along Castro and Polk Streets to deafening cheers. Milk led marchers the night on a 5-mile course through the city, constantly moving, aware that if they stopped for too long, there would be a riot. He declared, quote, "This is the power of the gay community. Anita's going to create a nationwide gay force," end quote. Activists had little time to recover, however, as the scenario replayed itself when the civil rights ordinances were overturned by voters in St. Paul, Minnesota, Wichita, Kansas, and Eugene, Oregon, throughout 1977 and into 1978. California State Senator John Briggs saw an opportunity in the Christian fundamentalist campaign. He was hoping to be elected governor of California in 1974 and was impressed with the voter turnout he saw in Miami. When Briggs returned to Sacramento, he wrote a bill that would ban gays and lesbians from teaching in public schools throughout California. Briggs claimed in private that he had nothing against gays, telling Randy Schiltz, "It's politics, just politics." Random attacks on gays rose in the Castro. When the police response was considered inadequate, groups of gays patrolled the neighborhood themselves on alert for attackers. On June 21, 1977, a gay man named Robert Hillsborough died from 15 stab wounds while his attackers gathered around him and chanted "faggot." Both Mayor Moscone and Hillsborough's mother blamed Anita Bryant and John Briggs. 1 week prior to the incident, Briggs had held a press conference at San Francisco City Hall where he called the city a sexual garbage heap because of homosexuals. Weeks later, 250,000 people attended the 1977 San Francisco Gay Freedom Day Parade, the largest attendance at any gay pride event to that point. In November 1976, voters in San Francisco had decided to reorganize supervisor elections to choose supervisors from neighborhoods instead of voting for them citywide. Harvey Milk quickly qualified as the leading candidate from District 5 surrounding Castro Street. Last campaign. Anita Bryant's vitriol and the multiple challenges to gay rights ordinances across the United States fueled gay politics in San Francisco. 17 candidates from the Castro District entered the next race for supervisor. More than half of them were gay. The New York Times ran an expose on the veritable invasion of gay people into San Francisco, estimating that the city's gay population was between 100,000 and 200,000 out of a total of 750,000. The Castro Village Association had grown to 90 businesses. The local bank, formerly the smallest branch in the city, had become the largest and was forced to build a wing to accommodate its new customers. Milk biographer Randy Schiltz noted that the broader historical forces were fueling his campaign. Milk's most successful opponent was the quiet and thoughtful lawyer Rick Stokes, who was backed by the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club. Stokes had been open about his homosexuality long before Milk had, and had experienced more severe treatment once hospitalized and forced to endure electroshock therapy. Milk, however, was more expressive about the role of gay people and their issues in San Francisco politics. Stokes was quoted saying, quote, "I'm just a businessman who happens to be gay," end quote, and expressed the view that any normal person could also be a homosexual. Milk's contrasting populist philosophy was related to the New York Times, quote, "We don't want sympathetic liberals. We want gays to represent gays. I represent the gay street people, the 14-year-old runaway from San Antonio. We have to make up for hundreds of years of persecution. We have to give hope to the poor runaway kid from San Antonio. They go to bars because churches are hostile. They need hope. They need a piece of the pie," end quote. Other causes were also important to Milk. He promoted larger and less expensive childcare facilities, free public transportation, and the development of a board of civilians to oversee the police. He advanced important neighborhood issues at every opportunity. Milk used the same manic campaign tactics as in previous races: human billboards, hours of handshaking, and dozens of speeches calling on gay people to have hope. This time, even the San Francisco Chronicle endorsed him for supervisor. He won by 30% against 16 other candidates, and after his victory became apparent, he arrived on Castro Street on the back of his campaign manager's motorcycle, escorted by Sheriff Richard Hungisto, to what a newspaper story described as a tumultuous and moving welcome. Milk had recently taken a new lover, a young man named Jack Lira, who was frequently drunk in public and just as often escorted out of political events by Milk's aides. Since the race for the California State Assembly, Milk had been receiving increasingly violent death threats. Concerned that his raised profile marked him as a target for assassination, he recorded on a tape who he wanted to succeed him if he were killed, adding, quote, "If a bullet should enter my brain, let that bullet destroy every closet door," end quote. Supervisor. Milk's swearing-in made national headlines, as he became the first openly gay, non-incumbent man in the United States to win an election for public office. He likened himself to pioneering African-American baseball player Jackie Robinson, and walked to City Hall arm in arm with Jack Lira, stating, quote, "You can stand around and throw bricks at City Hall, or you can take it over. Well, here we are," end quote. A single mother, Carol Ruth Silver, a Chinese-American, Gordon Lau, and an African-American woman, Ella Hill Hutch, were all first for the city sworn in with Milk, along with Daniel White, a former police officer and firefighter, who spoke of how proud he was that his grandmother was able to see him sworn in. Milk's energy, affinity for pranking, and his unpredictability at times exasperated the Board of Supervisors President Dianne Feinstein. In his first meeting with Mayor Moscone, Milk called himself the number one queen and dictated to Moscone that he would have to go through Milk instead of the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club if he wanted the city's gay votes, a quarter of San Francisco's voting population. Milk, however, became Moscone's closest ally on the Board of Supervisors. The biggest targets of Milk's ire were large corporations and real estate developers. He fumed when a parking garage was slated to take the place of homes near the downtown area and tried to pass a commuter tax so office workers who lived outside the city and drove into work would have to pay more when their city services were used. Milk was often willing to vote against Feinstein and other more tenured members of the board. Initially, he agreed with fellow supervisor Dan White, whose district was located 2 miles south of the Castro, that a mental health facility for troubled adolescents should not be placed in an old convent. However, after Milk learned more about the facility, he decided to switch his vote, ensuring that White would lose his cause, one he had championed while campaigning. White did not forget it. He opposed every initiative and issue that Milk supported. Milk began his tenure by sponsoring a civil rights bill that outlawed discrimination based on sexual orientation. The ordinance was called the most stringent and encompassing in the nation, and its passing demonstrated the growing political power of homosexuals, according to the New York Times. Only Supervisor White voted against it. Mayor Moscone enthusiastically signed it into law with a light blue pen that Milk had given him for the occasion. The second bill Milk concentrated on was designed to solve the number one problem according to a recent citywide poll, dog excrement. Within a month of being sworn in, he began to work on a city ordinance to require dog owners to scoop their pet's feces. Dubbed the Pooper Scooper Law, its authorization by the Board of Supervisors was covered extensively by television and newspapers in San Francisco. Milk's campaign manager called him a master at figuring out what would get him covered in the newspaper. He invited the press to DuBose Park to explain why it was necessary and, while cameras were rolling, stepped in the offending substance, apparently by mistake. His staffers, however, knew he had been at the park for an hour before the press conference, looking for the right place to walk in front of the cameras. It earned him the most fan mail of his tenure in politics and went out on national news releases. Milk and Lira soon split up, but Lira called him a few weeks later and demanded Milk come to his apartment. When Milk arrived, he found Lira had hanged himself. Already prone to severe depression, Lira had been upset about the Anita Bryant and John Briggs campaigns. Briggs Initiative. Further information, Briggs Initiative. John Briggs was forced to drop out of the 1978 race for California governor, but received enthusiastic support for Proposition 6, dubbed the Briggs Initiative. The proposed law would have made firing gay teachers and any public school employees who supported gay rights mandatory. Briggs' messages supporting Proposition 6 were pervasive throughout California, and Harvey Milk attended every event Briggs hosted. Milk campaigned against the bill throughout the state as well, and swore that even if Briggs won California, he would not win San Francisco. In their numerous debates, which toward the end had been honed to quick back-and-forth banter, Briggs maintained that homosexual teachers wanted to abuse and recruit children. Milk responded with statistics compiled by law enforcement that provided evidence that pedophiles identified primarily as heterosexual and dismissed Briggs' points with one-liner jokes. Quote, "If it were true that children mimic their teachers, you'd sure have a hell of a lot more nuns running around," end quote. Attendance at the Gay Pride marches during the summer of 1978 in Los Angeles and San Francisco swelled. An estimated 250,000 to 375,000 attended San Francisco's Gay Freedom Day parade. Newspapers claimed the highest numbers were due to John Briggs. Organizers asked participants to carry signs indicating their hometowns for the camera, to show how far people had come to live in the Castro district. Milk rode in an open car carrying a sign saying, "I'm from Woodmere, New York." He gave a version of what became his most famous speech, the Hope Speech, that the San Francisco Examiner said ignited the crowd. Quote, On this anniversary of Stonewall, I ask my gay sisters and brothers to make the commitment to fight for themselves, for their freedom, for their country. We will not win our rights by staying quietly in our closets. We are coming out to fight the lies, the myths, the distortions. We are coming out to tell the truths about gays, for I am tired of the conspiracy of silence, so I'm going to talk about it, and I want you to talk about it. You must come out. Come out to your parents, your relatives. End quote. Despite the losses and battles for gay rights across the country that year, he remained optimistic, saying, quote, even if gays lose in these initiatives, people are still being educated. Because of Anita Bryant in Dade County, the entire country was educated about homosexuality to a greater extent than ever before. The first step is always hostility, and after that you can sit down and talk about it. End quote. Citing the potential infringements on human rights, former Governor of California Ronald Reagan voiced his opposition to the proposition, as did Governor Jerry Brown and President Jimmy Carter, the latter in an afterthought following a speech he gave in Sacramento. The proposition lost by more than 1 million votes, astounding gay activists on election night. In San Francisco, 75% voted against it. Black Monday. Further information, Moscone Milk assassinations. On November 10, 1978, 10 months after being sworn in, Supervisor White resigned his position on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, claiming that his annual salary of $9,600 was not enough to support his family. Milk had also felt the pinch in the decrease in income when he and Scott Smith were forced to close the Castro Camera a month before. Within days, White requested the position again, and Mayor Moscone initially agreed. However, further consideration and intervention by other supervisors convinced the mayor to appoint someone more in line with the growing ethnic diversity in White's district and the liberal leanings of the Board of Supervisors. On November 18, news broke of the murder of California Representative Leo Bryan, who was in Jonestown, Guyana, to check on the remote community built by members of the People's Temple who had relocated from San Francisco. The next day came news of the mass suicide of members of the People's Temple. Horror came in degrees as San Franciscans learned more than 400 Jonestown residents were dead. Dan White remarked to two aides who were working for his reinstatement, quote, you see that? One day I'm on the front page and the next I'm swept right off, end quote. Soon the number of dead in Guyana topped 900. Moscone planned to announce White's replacement days later on November 27, 1978. Half an hour before the press conference, Dan White entered City Hall through a basement window to avoid metal detectors and made his way to Mayor Moscone's office. Witnesses heard shouting between White and Moscone, then gunshots. White shot the mayor once in the arm, then three times in the head after Moscone had fallen on the floor. White then quickly walked to his former office, reloading his police-issue revolver with hollow-point bullets along the way, and intercepted Harvey Milk, asking him to step inside for a moment. Diane Feinstein heard gunshots and called the police. She found Milk face down on the floor, shot five times, including twice in the head at close range. Feinstein was shaking so badly she required support from the police chief after identifying both bodies. It was she who announced to the press, quote, today San Francisco has experienced a double tragedy of immense proportions. It is my duty to inform you that both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed, quote unquote. Then added, after being drowned out by shouts of disbelief, quote, and the suspect is Supervisor Dan White, end quote. Milk was 48 years old, Moscone was 49. Within an hour, White called his wife from a nearby diner. She met him at a church and escorted him to turn himself into the police. Many residents left flowers on the steps of City Hall. That evening, a spontaneous gathering began to form on Castro Street, moving towards City Hall in a candlelit vigil. Their numbers were estimated between 25,000 and 40,000, spanning the width of Market Street, expanding the mile and a half from Castro Street. The next day, the bodies of Moscone and Milk were brought to the City Hall Rotunda, where mourners paid their respects. 6,000 mourners attended the service for Mayor Moscone at St. Mary's Cathedral. Two memorials were held for Milk, a small one at Temple Emmanuel, and a more boisterous one at the Opera House. City in Agony. Mayor Moscone had recently increased security at City Hall in the wake of the Jonestown suicides, Survivors from Guyana recounted drills for suicide preparations that Jones called White Nights. Rumors about Moscone's and Milk's murders were fueled by the coincidence of Dan White's name and Jones' suicide preparations. A stunned district attorney called the assassinations so close to the news of Jonestown incomprehensible, but denied any connection. Governor Jerry Brown ordered all flags in California to be flown at half-staff and called Milk a hard-working and dedicated supervisor, a leader of San Francisco's gay community who kept his promise to represent all his constituents. President Jimmy Carter expressed his shock at both murders and sent his condolences. Speaker of the California Assembly, Leo McCarthy, called it an insane tragedy. A city in agony topped the headlines in San Francisco Examiner the day after the murders. Inside the paper stories of the assassinations under the headline Black Monday were printed back-to-back with updates of bodies being shipped home from Guyana. An editorial describing, quote, "a city with more sadness and despair in its heart than any city should have to bear," went on to ask how such tragedies occur, particularly to, quote, "men of such warmth and vision and great energies." Dan White was charged with 2 counts of murder and held without bail, eligible for the death penalty owing to the recent passage of a statewide proposition that allowed death or life in prison for the murder of a public official. One analysis of the months surrounding the murders called 1978 and 1979, quote, "the most emotionally devastating years in San Francisco's fabulously spotted history." The 32-year-old White, who had been in the Army during the Vietnam War, had run a tough anti-crime platform in his district. Colleagues declared him a high-achieving, quote, "all-American boy." White was to have received an award the next week for rescuing a woman and child from a 17-story burning building when he was a firefighter in 1977. Though he was only supervisor to vote against Milk's gay rights ordinance earlier that year, he had been quoted as saying, quote, "I respect the rights of all people, including gays." Milk and White at first got along well. One of White's political aides, who was gay, remembered, quote, "Dan had more in common with Harvey than he did with anyone else on the board." White voted to support a center for gay seniors and to honor Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin's 25th anniversary and pioneering work. After Milk's vote for the mental health facility in White's district, however, White refused to speak with Milk and only communicated with one of Milk's aides. Other acquaintances remembered Milk as very intense. Quote, "he was impulsive. He was an extremely competitive man, obsessively so. I think he could not take defeat," end quote, San Francisco's assistant fire chief told reporters. White's first campaign manager quit in the middle of the campaign and told a reporter that White was an egotist and that it was clear he was anti-gay, though he denied it in the press. White's associates and supporters described him, quote, "as a man with a pugilistic temper and an impressive capacity for nurturing a grudge," end quote. The aide who ran between White and Milk remembered, quote, "talking to him, I realized that he saw Harvey Milk and George Moscone as representing all that was wrong in the world," end quote. When Milk's friends looked in his closet for a suit for the casket, they learned how much he had been affected by the recent decrease in his income as a supervisor. All of his clothes were coming apart, all of his socks had holes. He was cremated and his ashes were spilt, most of them scattered in the San Francisco Bay by his closest friends. Some of them were encapsulated and buried beneath the sidewalk in front of 575 Castro Street, where Castro Camera had been located. Harry Britt, one of 4 people Milk listed on his tape as an acceptable replacement should he be assassinated, was chosen by the acting mayor, Dianne Feinstein. Trial. Further information, Dan White, and the Twinkie defense. Dan White's arrest and trial caused a sensation and illustrated severe tensions between the liberal population and the city police. The San Francisco police were mostly working-class Irish descendants who intensely disliked the growing gay immigration, as well as the liberal direction of the city's government. After White turned himself in and confessed, he sat in his cell while former colleagues on the police force told Harvey Milk jokes. Police openly wore Free Dan White t-shirts in the days after the murder. An undersheriff for San Francisco later stated, quote, "the more I observed what went on at the jail, the more I began to stop seeing what Dan White did as the act of an individual and began to see it as a political act in a political movement," end quote. White showed no remorse for his actions and only exhibited vulnerability during an 8-minute call to his mother from jail. The seated jury for White's trial was white middle-class San Franciscans who were mostly Catholic. Gays and ethnic minorities were excused from the jury pool. The jury was clearly sympathetic to the defendant. Some of the members cried when they heard White's tearful recorded confession, at the end of which the interrogator thanked White for his honesty. White's defense attorney, Doug Schmidt, argued that he was not responsible for his actions, using the legal defense known as diminished capacity. Quote, good people, fine people, with fine backgrounds, simply don't kill people in cold blood, end quote. Schmidt tried to prove that White's anguished mental state was a result of manipulation by the politicos in City Hall who had consistently disappointed and confounded him, finally promising to give his job back only to refuse him again. Schmidt said that White's mental deterioration was demonstrated and exacerbated by his junk food binge the night before the murders, since he was usually known to have been health food conscious. Area newspapers quickly dubbed it the Twinkie defense. White was acquitted of the murders on May 21, 1979, but found guilty of voluntary manslaughter of both victims, and he was sentenced to serve 7 2/3 years. With the sentence reduced for time served and good behavior, he would be released in 5. He cried when he heard the verdict. White Knight Riots. Further information, White Knight Riots. Acting Mayor Feinstein, Supervisor Carol Ruth Silver, and Milk's successor, Harry Britt, condemned the jury's decision. When it was announced over police radio in the city, someone sang Danny Boy on the police band. A surge of people from the Castro district walked again to City Hall, chanting Avenge Harvey Milk and He Got Away with Murder. Pandemonium rapidly escalated as rocks were hurled at the front doors of the building. Milk's friends and aides tried to stop the destruction, but the mob of more than 3,000 ignored them and lit police cars on fire. They shoved a burning newspaper dispenser through the broken doors of the City Hall, then cheered as the flames grew. One of the rioters responded to a reporter's question of why they were destroying parts of the city. Quote, just tell people that we ate too many Twinkies. That's why this is happening. End quote. The chief of police ordered the police not to retaliate, but to hold their ground. The White Knight Riots, as they became known, lasted several hours. Later that evening, May 21, 1979, several police cruisers filled with officers wearing riot gear arrived on the Elephant Walk Bar in Castro Street. Harvey Milk's protege, Cleve Jones, and a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, Warren Hinkle, watched as officers stormed into the bar and began to beat patrons at random. After a 15-minute melee, they left the bar and struck out people walking along the street. The chief of police finally ordered the officers out of the neighborhood. By morning, 61 police officers and 100 rioters and gay residents of the Castro had been hospitalized. Over $1 million of damage had been done to City Hall, police cruisers, and the Elephant Walk Bar. After the verdict, the district attorney faced a furious gay community to explain what had gone wrong. The prosecutor admitted to feeling sorry for White before the trial and neglected to ask the interrogator who recorded White's confession, and who was a childhood friend of White's and his police softball team coach, about the biases and the support White received from the police because, he said, he did not want to embarrass the detective in front of his family in court. Nor did the prosecutor question White's frame of mind, lack of history of mental illness, or bring into evidence city politics, suggesting that revenge may have been a motive. Supervisor Carol Ruth Silver testified on the last day of the trial that White and Milk were not friendly, yet she had encountered the prosecutor and insisted on testifying. It was the only testimony the jury heard about their strained relationship. The district attorney blamed the jury, who he claimed had been, quote, taken in by the whole emotional aspect of the trial, end quote. Aftermath. Milk's and Moscone's murders and White's trial changed city politics and the California legal system. In 1980, San Francisco ended district supervisor elections, fearing that a board of supervisors so divisive would be harmful to the city, and that they had been a factor in the assassinations. A grassroots neighborhood effort to restore district elections in the mid-1990s proved successful, and the city returned to neighborhood representatives in 2000. As a result of Dan White's trial, California voters changed the law to reduce the likelihood of acquittals of accused who knew what they were doing but claimed their capacity was impaired. Diminished capacity was abolished as a defense to a charge, but courts allowed evidence of it when deciding whether to incarcerate, commit, or otherwise punish a convicted defendant. The Twinkie defense has entered American mythology, popularly described as a case where a murderer escapes justice because he binged on junk food, simplifying White's lack of political savvy his relationships with George Moscone and Harvey Milk, and what San Francisco Chronicle columnist Herb Kane described as pandemic police dislike, understatement, of homosexuals. Dan White served a little more than 5 years for the double murder of Moscone and Milk. On October 22, 1985, a year and a half after his release from prison, White was found dead in a running car in his ex-wife's garage. He was 39 years old. His defense attorney told reporters that he had been despondent over the loss of his family and the situation he had caused, adding, quote, "This was a sick man." Legacy. Politics. Harvey Milk's political career centered on making government responsive to individuals, gay liberation, and the importance of neighborhoods to the city. At the onset of each campaign, an issue was added to Milk's public political philosophy. His 1973 campaign focused on the first point, that as a small business owner in San Francisco, a city dominated by large corporations that had been courted by municipal government, his interests were being overlooked because he was not represented by a large financial institution. Although he did not hide the fact that he was gay, it did not become an issue until his race for the California State Assembly in 1976. It was brought to the fore in the supervisor race against Rick Stokes, as it was an extension of his ideas on individual freedom. Milk strongly believed that neighborhoods promoted unity and a small-town experience, and that the Castro should provide services to all its residents. He opposed the closing of an elementary school. Even though most gay people in the Castro did not have children, Milk saw his neighborhood as having potential to welcome everyone. He told his aides to concentrate on fixing potholes, and boasted that 50 new stop signs had been installed in the District 5. Responding to city residents' largest complaint about living in San Francisco, dog feces, Milk made it a priority to enact the ordinance requiring dog owners to take care of their pets' droppings. Randy Schultz noted, quote, "Someone claimed Harvey was a socialist or various other sort of ideologues, but in reality, Harvey's political philosophy was never more complicated than the issue of dog shit. Government should solve people's basic problems," end quote. Scholar Karen Foss attributes Milk's impact on San Francisco politics to the fact that he was completely unlike anyone else who had ever held office in the city. She writes, "Milk happened to be a highly energetic, charismatic figure with a love of theatrics and nothing to lose. Using laughter, reversal, transcendence, and his insider-outsider status, Milk helped create a climate in which dialogue on issues became possible. He also provided a means to integrate the disparate voices in his various constituencies," end quote. Milk had been a rousing speaker since he began campaigning in 1973, and his oratory skills only improved after he became city supervisor. His most famous talking points became known as the Hope Speech, which became a staple throughout his political career. It opened with a play on the accusation that gay people recruit impressionable youth into their numbers. Quote, "My name is Harvey Milk, and I want to recruit you," end quote. A version of the Hope Speech that he gave near the end of his life was considered by those who had heard it often to be the best, and the closing the most effective.
2 days after I was elected, I got a phone call. The voice was quite young. It was from Altoona, Pennsylvania. And the person said, "Thanks. And you've got to elect gay people so that that young child and the thousands upon thousands like that child know that there's hope for a better world. There's hope for a better tomorrow. Without hope, not only gays, but those blacks, and the Asians, the disabled, the seniors, the usses, without hope, the usses give up. I know that you cannot live on hope alone, but without it, life is not worth living. And you, got to give up hope." Thank you very much.
In the last year of his life, Milk emphasized that gay people should be more visible to help end the discrimination and violence against them. Although Milk had not come out to his mother before her death many years before, in his final statement during his taped prediction of his assassination, he urged others to do so. Quote, "I cannot prevent anyone from getting angry or mad or frustrated. I can only hope that they'll turn that anger and frustration and madness into something positive, so that 200, 300, 400, 500 will step forward, so the gay doctors will come out, the gay lawyers, the gay judges, gay bankers, gay architects. I hope that every professional gay will say, enough, come forward and tell everybody, wear a sign, let the world know. Maybe that will help. End quote. However, Milk's assassination has become entwined with his political efficacy, partly because he was killed at the zenith of his popularity. Historian Neil Miller writes, quote, no contemporary American gay leader has yet to achieve in life the stature Milk found in death, end quote. His legacy has become ambiguous. Randy Schiltz concludes his biography writing that Milk's successes, murder, and inevitable injustice of White's verdict represented the experience of all gays. Milk's life was a metaphor for the homosexual experience in America. According to Francis Fitzgerald, Milk's legend has been unable to be sustained, as no one appeared able to take his place in the years after his death. Quote, the Castros saw him as a martyr, but understood his martyrdom as an end rather than a beginning. He had died, and with him, a great deal of the Castros' optimism, idealism, and ambition seemed to die as well. The Castro could find no one to take his place in its affections, and possibly wanted no one. End quote. On the 20th anniversary of Milk's death, historian John D'Amelio said, quote, the legacy that I think he would want to be remembered for is the imperative to live one's life at all times with integrity. End quote. For a political career so short, Cleve Jones attributes more to his assassination than his life. Quote, his murder and the response to it made permanent and unquestionable the full participation of gay and lesbian people in the political process. End quote. Tributes and namesakes. The city of San Francisco has paid tribute to Milk by naming several locations after him. Where Market and Castro Streets intersect in San Francisco flies an enormous gay pride flag, situated in Harvey Milk Plaza. A democratic organization, more liberal than the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club, organized in 1976, quote, to keep the gay community free itself of anointed gatekeepers and machine politics, end quote. It changed its name to the Harvey Milk Memorial Gay Democratic Club in 1978, and boasts that it is the largest gay democratic organization in San Francisco. Since 2003, the Milk and Toklas clubs have fused somewhat under a unity coalition, which has become known as Malice, leaving many observers unable to distinguish their politics. In New York City, Harvey Milk High School is a school program for at-risk youth that concentrates on the needs of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students and operates out of the Hetrick Martin Institute. Media portrayals. Freelance reporter Randy Schiltz completed a biography of Milk in 1982, his first book, titled The Mayor of Castro Street. Schiltz wrote the book while unable to find a steady job as an openly gay reporter. A documentary film was based on the book, titled The Times of Harvey Milk, which won the 1984 Academy Award for Documentary Feature. Director Rob Epstein later wrote about why he chose the subject of Milk's life. Quote, at the time, for those of us who lived in San Francisco, it felt like it was life-changing, that all the eyes of the world were upon us. But in fact, most of the world outside San Francisco had no idea. It was just a really brief, provincial, localized current event story that the mayor and city council member in San Francisco were killed. It didn't have much reverberation. A musical theater production titled The Harvey Milk Show premiered in 1991. Harvey Milk, an opera written by Stuart Wallace that mythologizes Milk as a symbol for the birth and modern gay rights movement, debuted in 1996. In November 2008, the film Milk was released nationally. It first screened for a benefit at the Castro Theater on October 28. The film is directed by Gus Van Sant, with Sean Penn starring as Harvey Milk and Josh Brolin as Dan White. The movie took 8 weeks to film and often used extras who were present at the actual events for large crowd scenes, including a scene depicting Milk's Hope speech at the 1978 Gay Freedom Day Parade. Milk was included in Time 100 Heroes and Icons of the 20th Century as a symbol of what gays can accomplish and the dangers they face in doing so. Despite his antics and publicity stunts, quote, none understood how his public role could affect private lives better than Milk. He knew that the root cause of the gay predicament was invisibility, end quote. The Advocate listed Milk third in their 40 Heroes of the 20th Century issue, quoting Dan Feinstein, quote, his homosexuality gave him an insight into the scars which all oppressed people wear. He believed that no sacrifice was too great a price to pay for the cause of human rights, end quote. Harry Britt summarized Milk's impact the evening Milk was shot in 1978, quote, no matter what the world has taught us about ourselves. We can be beautiful, and we can get our thing together. Harvey was a prophet. He lived by a vision. Something very special is going to happen in this city, and it will have Harvey Milk's name on it. End quote. This has been a reading of the article Harvey Milk on Wikipedia.